This is Open Run.
Not bad.
Nailed it. Love it.
Welcome back to Open Run. There are things brewing in the East this year. That's right, the Eastern Conference. That's what I want to talk about. I'm your co-host, Stefan Maralichakis. Partner in crime, Jesse Williams, is about to join us. But in the meantime, Ben Cruz is already dialed in Los Angeles. Ben, how's it going?
Going well, man. You know, just NBA season's in full swing. We got a big game tonight, my Warriors versus the your engineer over there, Paul Celtics. It's a big one, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can talk about Boston, but we can't scratch that itch for Paul yet. What we first need to talk about is a team that your Warriors played recently, who is taking the league by storm, who has taken NBA Twitter by storm, and that would be the process-driven Philadelphia 76ers. And Joel Embiid, the man known as the process, and Ben Simmons, the, I don't know, what is he, like red shirt rookie of the year to be?
Yeah, easily.
Right? And he's, they just played the Lakers last night, and it was just, you know, I think it was being billed as Lonzo Ball versus Ben Simmons, and when it all came out in the wash, Ben Simmons was victorious. But did you catch any of that game, and did you see them play the Warriors the other night?
I did see them play the Warriors, obviously, and they hung tight with them for the first half, and then, you know, experience and just overall championship medal came through at the end, and it, you know, it wasn't too shocking to see them lose. But last night's game against the Lakers, wasn't too surprised about the outcome of that either. I think the Sixers are just better. I think they have more talent across the board. So what stood out to me most was Embiid performing on such a huge stage. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not his first time at Staples, but performing in front of what was, you know, national TV crowd and, you know, playing against Lonzo, who has all this hype and stuff like that. So it was really cool to see him really, really, really shine last night. And even his post-game interview was legendary. They, you know, they asked him, what percentage are you at health-wise? He dropped a little 69, you know, a little middle grade, middle school-esque humor, which I loved. So, you know, I love Joel Embiid. I think he's fantastic for the NBA.
Well, the thing about him that I was just talking about today was everyone talks about the, you know, it's seemingly the death of the big man as we knew him, as we knew it to be, mm-hmm. and maybe even the death of positions, you know, moving into this so-called positionless basketball era.
Right, right.
And what's wild about him is he is kind of past and future blended into one. And then when you watch his highlights from last night, it was a 46-point game, right? I want to say like 7 assists, 7 boards. Does that sound right to you?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure mm-hmm. that was the deal. And when you watch the highlights, he has these, like, you know, he's doing like dream shake style moves in the post, but then he also has this, like, I always want to say Sabonis style passing, and he's also able to, you know, just unveil the three ball, you know, not at will, but increasingly at will. So it's this really wild thing, because I'm in New York watching Porzingis all the time, and he's very future, right? There's not as much,
right.
You know, he actually wants to play the four, even though he's 7'3", but Embiid seems to be kind of straddling both eras and succeeding, and it's just wild to behold. And then with Simmons, and I'm dying to say that Simmons' sanity is taking over the league, but I don't know if that really works, Ben. But he's also like this modern point guard who has, I guess, some traditional aspects to his play. But, you know, Earl Watson was on the show recently. We were talking about how he wants Devin Booker, you know, the star of his former squad, to embrace playing a point guard as well. It's like I don't know. It is an exciting new era. This season really has kind of christened all these, like, the new wave of talent. It's actually like a real pool to believe in, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as much praise as I just heaped on Embiid, watching Simmons this year he's as good, if not better, than advertised. I mean, he almost had a triple-double last night. What was it, 19, 10, and 9, I think? And, you know, had a bunch of steals. It's just crazy to see someone that size with that kind of vision, and just his basketball IQ is fantastic so far, especially for a rookie. And, you know, obviously the shooting still isn't there, but I think that, as with all young big men coming into this league, like, that will come. Like, there was once upon a time where Blake Griffin couldn't shoot, right? Mm-hmm. And now he's striping threes regularly. So assuming that Ben has that type of work ethic, and by all accounts he does, because I just don't know how you stay this ready after a year where you essentially sat out. You know, it's been incredible to just see his development over these, what was it, 13, 15 games that they've played so far. So he's absolutely been amazing to watch as well.
I guess the looming fear is the return of these horrible injury situations, but we're going to knock, I'm knocking on wood as we speak, and I hope it's wood. Yeah. Go with the old head knock here and to just not speak that into being. But you mentioned shooting issues, rookies having shooting issues. And I believe you're the guy who pointed out to me this this very helpful tweet from Drew Unga via Jacob Rude, just shouting out all the Twitter handles I can find, that you know, about Lonzo Ball's shooting, because his and his general rookie stats so far. Because Lonzo Ball's big issue, obviously, thus far, is the very strange-looking shot that is not falling. And you pointed out to me that if you look at, you know, legendary point guard Jason Kidd's first 15 games in the NBA, his numbers were 9.3 points, 6.9 assists, 6.2 boards, 2.3 steals, and his shooting, Wait, what was 33-14-75? Woof. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rough.
I almost thought there was a typo. and Lonzo, 9 points, about the same. 6.9 assists, the same. 6.6 boards, just about the same. One less steal, and then 30-23-50. So, you know, there's still a lot of room for improvement, but the point being, these guys are really young. And my only question with Lonzo is he going to have to do a rehaul? What is the, what's the plan there? You're in L.A. Come on. What are they talking about over there?
You know, I think it's still too early to tell. I think Lonzo, he's got a lot of pressure on him. He's the new face of a very storied franchise. I think that's probably weighing on him. I think, you know, being a rookie is weighing in on him. I think the added pressure of, and look, there are two separate ways to feel about how LaVar Ball kind of just came in like a wrecking ball, and, you know, started bragging about his son to anyone that would listen. I do think that has played a factor in the amount of scrutiny that Lonzo has received over these first 15 games, right? I mean, it's not incredibly shocking to see a rookie struggle like this because, you know, it takes a while to adjust to the NBA game. But would it be as bad if LaVar wasn't touting him as, you know, a hands-down rookie of the year, better than Steph Curry, he's going to lead the Lakers to the playoffs? There's just so much on Lonzo's shoulders, whether he likes to admit it or not. And then obviously the stuff with his brother over at UCLA.
Mm.
I just, you know, it's a lot to take in for someone who's, I mean, how old is he? He's like a year removed from, or 2 years removed from high school. So,
right.
At that age, I could barely walk down the street without, you know, I'd have to look three times, you know, down the street just to make sure I wasn't going to get hit by a car. So this guy's leading an NBA team, and it'll all come together for him. I do think he is very talented and
very
Kidd-esque. So, and the numbers are just kind of a little freaky that they're that similar after first 15 games of both their careers.
I mean, with the Ball family, it's like you live by the clickbait, you die by the clickbait. And in all reality, they will live. I mean, he's really great. I am curious he's just maybe not going to, I mean, the thing with Jason Kidd is, like, by the time he was in New York, he'd become this other character who could shoot threes, was still a floor general and still an incredible passer, but he'd rounded out that side of his game. So I just don't know.
Huge person who helped the Mavericks win that title against the Heat a few years ago.
But what is Lonzo going to do with that ugly shot? Do you think it's viable?
You know, it's...
But I'm not saying I'm just calling it like I see it.
It all depends on, you know, I think it's going to take an offseason to decide whether, are we really going to go down this route? Is this across-the-face kind of slingshot, all-wrist thing really going to work? Or is it time to overhaul? I don't know. I mean, Sean Marion, you know, flicked it like a volleyball for his whole career, and he was an actual viable three-point threat that people had to close out on. So,
excellent NBA Jam player, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He could do it all. So, you know, is it time to overhaul? I think... You know, 15 games is a little too early to make that assessment about Lonzo, but I do think he's going to find some sort of rhythm here, and he just has that thing where you watch him where you're like, he should be good. Whether he becomes that remains to be seen, but I do think he's going to get there. I think he'll be fine.
Beyond the shooting oddities, it's just his feel for the game seems like when you have that like unteachable element where it seems like he just can the court vision and the feel for it.
Right.
And yep. the way his teammates react to him and the way coaches do, it just seems like he seems like he's bound to succeed. I'm obviously rooting for him. But a question I have, I wanted to bring it back. I forgot to kind of button up something with the Sixers, which is there's all this talk, especially because Joel Embiid has become the kind of walking, talking, just the spokesman for the process that was
right.
begun by, you know, I would say now legendary, Sam Hinkie, former GM of the team who resigned, technically speaking resigned, right? But I don't know if it was a forced out issue or a parting ways issue. But anyway, he left the team and subsequently all these players who had been plagued by injuries and hadn't even seen the court, they're now taking the court and obviously the result is looking really good. Do you think this validates not just Hinkie but basically the tanking process? Or do you think that...
I think...
You do.
I think even before, you know, the Sixers kind of blew out or, you know, came out this year and showed that, oh, hey, we've got all these talented players that we acquired through the draft, the NBA basically admitted that what he did was correct in that they changed the lottery system a little bit, right, to disincentivize tanking. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, whether that actually works, we'll see kind of, you know, next June when the lottery balls are back out there. But, you know, Hinkie was right. You know, he didn't want to be in that middle ground, right? And that makes complete sense. You either want to be a championship team or you want to bottom out so that you can become a championship team. And they've assembled a plethora of talent. It's insane that they, you know, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Markel Fultz when he comes back, those three guys that you could build a team around them. You know, obviously Fultz is hurt right now and that his ceiling remains to be seen, but mm-hmm. assuming he kind of figures out his shooting issues and everything else, like that's a three that, you know, I saw an article today about, you know, who's actually the future of the East. Is it the Celtics who are, you know, thriving and doing amazing, or is it the Sixers? And there's a reason for why that they are considered a team of the future in the East is because they have all these young players who you had them on 2K, you feel good. You know, you feel like you can you be able to beat your friend with those three guys. So.
Look, like my mother always said, timing is everything. That would always come up whenever I would try to do anything. Timing is everything. And the issue now is and people think that Ainge was doing this too with the Celtics. Teams in the East being, the architects of the teams in the East, the teams that will succeed are the ones that are waiting for LeBron's run to come to an end. And, you know, teams like the Sixers are quite well positioned for it. The Celtics the Celtics will likely, I mean, look, it depends what LeBron does in the offseason. If he goes west, the Celtics have a lane. If he goes to Philly, like people are now trying to say, or New York, which people are, I can't believe people think New York after what happened this week, but we'll have to talk. I want to talk about what happened this week later with our friend LeBron James. But, I don't really it's interesting to me thinking about how you structure teams now, how you're meant to rebuild. Because the funny thing is I was all in. I've been wanting the team I root for here in New York to embrace a full-on tank forever. And I was assuming that would happen this year. And I get one little glimpse of daylight, and you can see how intoxicating it is to a dumb fan, a sometimes dumb fan, to just want them to win now, even if win now means like barely make, you know, not even being 500 and just eking into the playoffs. So what Hinkie did was an ugly thing and was rough on various parties, but it's yielding fruit now. I mean,
well, look, I don't even blame you for craving that playoff run. I mean, even if it is a 7 or 8 or 6 seed.
I think it's moronic the part of me that wants that I think is moronic. But it's very,
you know, I don't want to call you a moron. I'll let you call yourself a moron. I don't want to call you a moron.
You can.
But you know, I, as a Warriors fan, when they hadn't made the playoffs for, what was it, 13 years, and they, you know, barely got into that 8th spot and took on the Mavericks during the We Believe year. No, I don't think anyone legitimately thought that they were going to win the championship. But just having that first taste of, oh, we're back in the playoffs, you know, it's. There's just a different feel to the playoffs in the regular season, right? Because there's, 16 teams left standing? So I totally get that. I don't think you're I don't think you're a moron personally, but
thank you. Well, dude, the thing about that is that you hear the star, the alpha on the team, Kristaps Porzingis, talking about how much he wants to go to the playoffs. And even if technically speaking, I want everything to go perfectly so that everyone's happy, but they don't make it and they get Luka Doncic or they get, you know, whomever from, you know, in the draft. The truth is you can't really game it that way. You need your star player to be happy too. And I can't imagine like the Knicks running into the ground. I'm just trying to figure out how those things will jive together.
Players don't want to tank. That comes from upper management level
of course.
Look, you'll make up reasons and ways to tank. Like the Warriors did it to get Harrison Barnes, right? To get that seventh pick. So people have done it, but you know, to your point, the players don't want to do it. They don't care. The guys that people are looking at in the draft, they could be taking their jobs. So why should they care about the future when they're more concerned about the now?
Well, speaking of the now, I want to do a little bit of a reality check with the teams who are thriving and the teams who are struggling early in this season. I want to get your read on what you think is kind of reality and which teams you think are kind of, I don't know, house of cards situation. The teams that jump out to me right now, we kind of addressed the Lakers situation. We knew they'd be... We know they're still in early days of rebuild, and I actually agree with you that to try to jump in with like really hot takes about this, the state of Lonzo is a little, it's more than a little premature. But the teams that come to mind most immediately are actually the Thunder and the Celtics.
Okay.
The Celtics, to me, I'm not surprised. Like going into the season, I assumed the Celtics would be one of the top teams in the league. What's obviously surprising is how well they're doing with in the absence of Gordon Hayward. So do you think this is sustainable? Tonight against the Warriors, they're defending, what, a 12-game win streak? Is that right?
13,
okay.
Don't shortchange them. Don't do
Baker's,
that.
Baker's dozen.
Yeah.
But how does this map out over the rest of the season? Is this a sustainable situation?
I mean, I completely believe it's sustainable to be the number one seed in the East. They did it last year,
yeah.
Barely, but it's absolutely sustainable. Do I think that they are ready to beat the Warriors in a 7-game series or even the Cavs in a 7-game series in the playoffs? No. I think looking at their schedule, this 13-game run, don't get me wrong, super impressive, but they've beaten teams that they're supposed to beat. Like, they're better. I was looking through this earlier. They were better than all the teams on paper except two, I think. The Spurs, and the Thunder before they're still figuring things out. But those are the only two teams, really, where, arguably you're like, okay, that game could kind of go either way. But everyone else, it was all these teams that just aren't very good. So the Celtics are taking care of business. So not to discredit what they're doing. Again, a win streak this long is not easy in the NBA. But they're beating teams they're supposed to beat. So I don't know if I'm ready to hand over the Larry O'Brien trophy to Boston just yet.
Oh, fine. Yeah, no, me neither here. But they do sit atop the East currently. The East standings are so strange right now. If I had told you that a fifth of the season, like 20% of the way into the season, the Pistons would be number two, the Cavs would be number nine. It's a very odd scene. And the Knicks would be number five, yeah. I don't know. The real issue here also is, because you brought up a team, the team that is honestly surprising but also kind of meeting some expectations in a way is the Thunder, which, mm-hmm. It's odd that they're struggling. Like, it's odd that they're not shiny right out of the gates, but it's also not that surprising given the assembly of the talent, the nature of the talent they've assembled. It kind of comes with a prolonged training wheels period, I think. I'm just wondering, I guess the question here ends up being, do you think they get out of it? And also, how does this affect the likelihood of a Paul George or a Melo actually, I mean, Melo's under contract for the next couple of years, but let's say a Paul George actually wanting to stay on. Or do you see these early struggles being something that they'll fight through to a certain degree, but in the end, someone like him is like, yeah, this is cool, I'll make it work, but then I will flee for greener pastures.
Like you said, their early struggles here aren't all that surprising. I mean, you're going from Westbrook all by himself, essentially, last year, doing what he wanted, And then you have to mix in Carmelo Anthony, who's used to being the guy. You have to mix in Paul George, who's used to being the guy. And, you know, the rest of their roster, honestly, they're not a very deep team. So it's not super surprising that they've struggled like this. I think eventually they will figure it out. They'll be in the playoff picture. And, you know, if the basketball gods are listening at all, a Thunder-Warriors playoff series would be absolutely preferred at some point. But, again, not surprising. Not surprising at all. You know, what does this mean for Paul George's future? I haven't really been looking at it from a basketball standpoint. I've kind of looked at how he's interacted with Melo and Russ, you know, off the court. And he seems to get along with those guys very, very well. Obviously, you know, what you see in front of the cameras and what goes on behind the scenes are two completely different things. But what I've seen, there's kind of a vibe there of I think he enjoys it. Mm-hmm. That being said, I still think there is a decent chance that he leaves and heads west. I still think that that's very much on the table because he hasn't committed at all to saying, I'll be back. And, you know, most players won't do that just, you know, from a leverage standpoint. But I don't think he is, you know, I don't think his mind is made up. And
I mean, we always debate what is in players' minds, right? We always, what informs decisions? And there's a kind of moralistic hierarchy of, well, you know, the top players just want to win rings, but they don't want to chase rings. They want to win them on their own terms. And I want to, you know, like, there's a requisite amount of challenge that has to be there. And then, but the truth is, that's all swirling in the ether. And then the Warriors signed Kevin Durant. And the way that the Warriors' current state of affairs affects the league, it just changes everything. But hang on. I was going to pivot to your Warriors, but we got Jesse calling in. Jesse, you there?
Hot ticket. What's happening?
Oh, there we go. Well, a lot's happening. We actually want to talk since we have you now. We wanted to see if you had any feelings, any deep feelings about what the hell is going on in Chicago, where your Bulls are literally giving one another concussions with their fists, and do you have any read on what's going on? Have you just tuned out?
Last I heard that there were cracking skulls and taking names and taking sides, right? Did Portis, one of them decided, say you got to pick, it's either him or me, and everybody picked Portis, is that right?
I believe, Ben, is that what you heard? I know that it sounds like everyone's on Portis' side.
Yeah, I heard that.
People are picking sides.
Is anybody picking the other side, or are they all picking Portis' side?
It's a lot of conjecture,
this is
Jesse.
It's a lot of. This is like, we need our own like NBA gossip column, basically. It's like it's a cafeteria. It's like Mean Girls in the cafeteria.
Well, dude, the problem is we're also talking about like how, and look, I don't want to. Last week in your absence, yes, I happily threw the Bulls under the bus, and you know, yes,
yes, you did.
Yes, they used to be great. Now they're not. Ha ha. It's gratifying to me to a certain degree. You're here now. I won't rub your face in it more than I just did, but we're talking about the nature of the rebuild anyway, and I don't know. We were actually just about to, before you joined, we were talking about how wild it is the way the Sixers are actually, they have tanked their way to blowing everyone's minds, and how the Lakers are mid-rebuild, and just how the state of the Warriors affects how you might approach a rebuild. Like at this point, if you were a GM, are you like, this is great, I'm just going to see which kid is being born next year and plan on drafting him in like 2030.
Right. Like, do they view the Warriors as so dominant that you might as well not try to compete now? Let's punt this and prepare for a few years down the road when we think Steph's hips are going to be bothering him?
Well, it's like, like in the East, it seems like some people are waiting for LeBron's prime to, which it seems like will never end, to someday end in the, and then there's this looming specter of the Warriors who seem like their prime will not end for ages. I mean, what would you do if you were running a team right now?
Well, I mean, what I do think that the Warriors' kind of shock to the system for everybody in the league has been a wake-up call for GMs and teams. We've got a lot of teams that they're trying to super team it up, but they're just getting better fast and should be taken seriously. I think the Celtics have won 13 in a row. Oklahoma made some changes. You know, the few teams Spurs are always hanging around. Houston tried to, you know, they tried to make some offseason moves. I think the teams have kind of snapped into action and like, let's at least have the appearance of we're taking ourselves seriously and we're trying to actually win the occasional basketball game. I think a lot of teams have just been on coast, and that's a good thing. The Sixers, you're right. They did their little tanking thing. It seems to have. Now we have something to see. We actually at least have something to watch. But if I'm the GM now, I'm trying to fucking make trades and make great draft picks and win ASAP. Because by the time you're really going to be ready, it's going to be a couple of years from now anyway. Trying for now is trying for 3 years.
Right. Well, that's what I was talking about earlier also. I was saying to Ben, like, my whole line, and we talked about this on the show ad nauseum, is like, I want New York to tank. I want New York to embrace it. I want New York to, you know, I want to think big. I don't want to fall into this, you know, visceral, like, you know, just the feeling of cheering in the fourth quarter. But you know what I like? Cheering in the fourth quarter and the team winning. Like, I watched the Knicks play the Jazz. They were down 8 or 10, and then they came back. And it feels great. And when you have stars on the team who want to win, like, you know, there are the teams that really do thrive, like a San Antonio. They're the teams that are able to rebuild without even realizing it. Like, they're retooling.
They have a foundation. They have a foundation, yes, that you're swapping two guys in and out of, as opposed to having to do a full rebuild.
In a prevailing culture.
90 games. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the culture that the Knicks were in. I mean, how do you feel as a Knicks fan when you look at the excitement happening around that team, and obviously Kristaps coming through as a real player, and some people are talking MVP candidate. Not going to happen, but still, it's really great and it's exciting to see. Does that make you think of Dolan? Do you think of Phil, because that's Phil Jackson's pick? I mean,
it's a weird stew, and I definitely don't think of Dolan in terms of credit. I am thinking about. I've always been confused by Phil's presence, what he actually had a hand in, what he didn't. But truth be told, if you look at it as net results, is it better than it was before he was there? Well, yes. So I have to credit him with that much. Like, there are weird signings, and right before he left, he was at least bluffing, if not serious, about putting Porzingis on the trade block because he had skipped out on his exit meeting and was, like, giving bad vibes to the team, according to him.
Right.
And then there's, the scuttlebutt is that he was really in love with Okafor for the triangle. So there's a lot of revisionist history. You could say this, that, or the other might have happened. He could have traded Zing. He could have not even picked him. But he did pick him, and he didn't get traded. And he took Frank Ntilikina, who I think is going to be a great player. Second youngest player in the league. The subject, speaking of scuttlebutt, the subject of much scuttlebutt, actually, Jesse. And something. Well, before we get, there's a shame or fame I want to discuss regarding Frank. But in terms of the state of things in the Knicks, it's like, I'm really excited, and it reminds me, actually, there's a writer, John Ronson, who I remember hearing an interview with, and he talked about his life as a young writer. And when he'd approach a story, like as a journalist, he would have in his mind the way he wanted things to go. And if things didn't turn out in real life the way he'd envisioned ahead of time, he'd think it was a bust. But then later on, as he grew up as a writer, he realized that the best thing to do is let the story take you where it takes you. So if the Knicks are going to be good now in a way that seems sustainable and keeps your 22-year-old star happy. The combined age of their best players is 41. And it's like, if you're going to be, you know, like if they're actually going to be good now and have daylight, it doesn't make sense to switch the lights off, I'm realizing. But again, that doesn't happen at a player level. It happens at a higher up level. So at some point, if the Knicks prove to be pretty good but not good enough, I don't have problems with saying, look, Porzingis needs to rest. He's 7'3" and playing like a guard. Like, and if they can skew towards, you know, I don't think they should break their backs to make the playoffs, even though I know happily someone like Zing would disagree, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, what does happen at a player level is, you know, winning is contagious and it's cultural. And, I mean, as a Melo fan, how do you process this new spark after, as soon as Melo leaves the building, what do you attribute that to?
I mean, I don't think it's a big shocker. I mean, I think we talked about this. I talk about things like this a lot, so I forget if I'm repeating myself. But like, I definitely think of when I think of the Melo trade, people are like, how do you feel about that? And I think it's like, you know, when you're in a relationship and you still really love you know, you love the other person, but you know it's not working. You have to. So you're still crying when you break up.
Well, what about like just as a basket, but this is the construction of a team. Are the Knicks better without Melo? Like losing him, does that make room for Kristaps to grow, for the team to gel in a different way, canter?
And I think that Porzingis really revered Melo, and it's not like he wasn't starting to shine, but it's like this gave him room to kind of unabashedly take the helm. And also everyone was telling him, like, yo, you have to take the helm now. And I do think that also the Phil departure is potentially a big deal because, you know, I don't know enough of the nuances. I'm no Tex Winter, but, like, I do think that Hornacek is able to operate unencumbered now. So the combination of, like, Melo, historically, the numbers will tell you he does stop the ball. He does hang on to the ball. And you know, he it looks like he's – I think he's maybe trying to do less of that in Oklahoma, but now in New York – you watch the game, they're swinging the ball around. It's like giving guys with less talent, less like star power, more room to shine, and they're playing more as a unit. There's still a lot to be desired. But I could not have anticipated how quickly Porzingis averaging 30 points a game is not something even I would have predicted. But, dude, I do have a shame or fame about this year that I want to ask you about this week. And I'd love a non Knicks fan opinion from both of you.
Right.
Are you all up to speed on what happened when the Cavaliers came to the Garden this week and our dear friend LeBron James, he engineered a fourth quarter comeback and then did something on Instagram?
What did he do on Instagram? The train ride?
No, well, there was
King
that.
King of New York.
Yeah, he posted a photo of him standing by the Knicks logo in the Garden, an overhead photo, and he captioned it something like, "I think it was said, you're welcome, King of New York."
I mean, that was a direct response to Cantor's comment, right? Because Cantor was listing off
the princess comment.
Yeah, the princess, queen, whatever. I think it was a direct response to Cantor's, you know, diss, if you will.
Well, it's kind of a. I would say that what LeBron did is also taken a page out of the Kendrick book. It's kind of a Kendrick Lamar when he started coming really hard at everybody after Control. He said he's the king of New York. Like, he's the king of everything. And the great way to rile people up is to say you're the king of the media capital of the world, whether it's in sports or hip-hop or whatever. And I think that he was saying, like, this is my shit. When I come here, I dominate. I'm the star on the court. I'm the one that won the game. I'm the one that carried his team. All you guys are just players.
I mean, for me, it's a clear shame for not consulting me and thinking about the shrapnel I might have to face as someone
fair
who's
enough.
a vocal Knicks fan and also happens to like LeBron James a lot and even, you know, be in league with the man. That was a lot. I mean, I also do think, though, I would like to read it as someone, you know, like the classic kind of, like it's a flirtation. Like that doesn't mean he hates New York. It means he wants to be loved by New York, even though he's turning the screw.
I think that's a good point.
I have to think that. For my own sanity. I was up all night after that game.
First of all, the fact that you guys are in that game, that's just a huge sign of progress. I think
that's
exciting.
That's a shocker. Like the Cavs like had to engineer a huge comeback. Yeah.
We just saw that. You just saw an exciting Knicks game.
against the three-time reigning conference champions.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool. That's it. And it was close and big players were making big shots. I don't know why you don't get out on LeBron at that point, but with your arms down with your knuckles dragging on the floor, KP. But what is your default without thinking about it? Your go-to nickname for KP nowadays? Are we still doing Flamingo? What are we doing?
I want to say Flamingo, but it really didn't. It hasn't taken on. I mean, people say the unicorn. I just end up always saying Zing, which is lazy. And unicorn unicorn feels a little too much almost.
Exactly.
It's become a genre.
Right. It's like saying goat. Everybody's a fucking goat.
Oh, dude. Don't even get me started. Does that drive
everything's
you insane?
Legend.
Everything's
legendary.
Is goat. Is he a goat? By definition, goat means one thing. There's only one thing ever. It's not like almond is the goat croissant, but so is butter.
right. You're saying there can only be one, but you're like,
What an example. Croissants. I'm hungry. I want to also get you both to weigh in on this. There's a GQ story about Kevin Durant that's going around, and in which KD says that he feels like he's legitimately gained ground on LeBron. He feels like after he hit that pivotal shot in Game 3 of the Finals, it was kind of a torch passing. Yeah, so I want to know what both of you think. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, even though it's funny, maybe it's more like I don't know. Where do you land on that?
Well, I think it is easy for us to forget how the run that KD has had. What was it? I mean, he was the scoring champ 3 or 4 out of 5 years. He was scoring champ and MVP. He had incredible numbers and impact as a member of the Thunder on his team. But to come to the Warriors where you're stacked, where you are the Olympic team, I think everything's going to have an asterisk in terms of if he's referring to specific performance or stat. This day I had a great game. This moment that I had really pushed me over the edge. Like, yeah, but you were on an all-star team, and that's always going to register differently with people. Your 40 points there in the book goes down as 21 points. Everything gets curved. everything with KD's career from now on is on a curve, I think, in terms of popular opinion, in terms of the data, no?
No, wait, Ben, you get to weigh in on this, but Jesse, just because you know how I think we both like when things have context, I should give you context. Zach Barron, in his writing for GQ, says, in Game 3, with his team trailing the Cleveland Cavaliers with under a minute to go, he hit the shot of his life. A three-pointer tossed up as casually and optimistically as a wave hello over LeBron James, his role model and rival. Quote, that was the best moment I ever had, Durant told me. I made the game-winning shot in the finals against my fucking idol. Somebody that I really, really, really followed since I was a ninth-grade high schooler. I felt like he was passing the torch to me. So it's there's a little more, it is reverential in tone. But mm-hmm, I also hear your point. I mean, yeah. And that's always been LeBron's cross to bear, that he's constantly, and I know the Cavs have bolstered the talent around him, but he's often been the guy, kind of like, you know, not exactly Iverson-esque, you know, like in that one finals where Iverson kind of took that squad on his back, but he's had to, with the Cavs, take them on his back in the first tenure and again. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I say that as kind of because of the heat that he gets. I'm a huge KD fan, and I think that we'd have you get to see him in his glory more on a team that wasn't so damn stacked. You know, it's just crowded. It's a crowded court. You know, and that's just the way it goes. I don't actually begrudge his decision or anything like that. I don't keep an asterisk over it, but when you throw out what do you call it? Kind of not dog whistle, but you throw out kind of red meat into the crowd, comparing yourself to LeBron James or a torch being passed, things like that. It's just KD seems very aware of press and media and how things are covered, hot button words are, etc. So it seems like a little bit of he's aware of what he's doing. You can't pass the torch if you're still there. Like LeBron is still in full savage mode. So
his numbers are outrageous still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Ben, I don't want you to suffer in silence. Do you have thoughts on the Durant standing?
This interview took place, I believe they were in India during the NBA India tour. So this is fresh. This is fairly fresh off of winning the championship. So I think saying something like this was he was obviously on cloud nine and everything else. But to your point, Stefan, it is more a reverential tone. He's not saying LeBron isn't good anymore and you know I'm better than him. He's looked up to LeBron so much at that moment. That Game 3 moment was KD's probably defining moment of his career so far. So I think he wanted to basically underline and exclamation point that. So I don't think it's a slight at all. And to Jesse's point, I think people are going to take it like that because, you know, everyone on Twitter and you know, Instagram, they all hate KD right now. And they'll find any way to pile on him. So you know, it is what it is. It was a good interview. It was a great article through GQ, but it wasn't disrespectful. I think it was, again, he was looking up to him.
No, and I also think that if you're a killer in the league, you have to talk like this. I think there's a degree of, like, you have to think that you're the shit, And yeah, and it wasn't some aggro move. Like, you know, I would hope, yeah, I would always want, and by the way, I you know how they say, like, what, no, it's not a saying, but basically when good shit's going on in your life, you don't have to worry about the other shit as much. Like, you know, just to continue with breakup thoughts, like once you start seeing somebody new, you're not worried about the ex. For yeah. me, I feel like I was so freaked out by Durant doing that. And now all I see is Porzingis, and all I see is, you know, like,
on
my own level, all I look at is like, oh yeah, here's a, like, I've got something good going. Anyway, whoa, the time has flown. We have to wrap it up. Oh, heartbreak here. I don't know. I guess we're just going to have to pick this up soon. Tonight, we're recording. This is going to come out after the Celtics and Warriors, the two streaking teams, the two hottest teams in the two conferences, face off. So we'll have a better sense of where things are at.
Yeah. Did you guys hear Kyrie explain the difference in the mask performance?
No. No.
Everybody was excited about him coming, you know, mask Kyrie, you know, kind of superhero, this thing, you know, it's like he's putting on his cape because he went off last time he was in a mask as a Cavalier. And he said he played in a clear mask as a Celtic the other night. And he said, no, people don't realize, people think I went, you know, I went crazy. I got superpowers when I had the black mask on. But really it was because it blocked all my peripheral vision and all I could see was in front of me. I couldn't pass it because I couldn't see anybody. So I just had to score. So I was just, you know, just gunning like crazy because I had that damn black mask on and it was giving me tunnel vision. But now the clear one that I could see and I could distribute and play my game. So he kind of like rubbed some of the shine off of the legend of black mask Kyrie.
All right, man. All right, gents.
All right, guys.
More soon. I guess, Jesse, you're a big Knicks fan now. Is
that
what you're telling me?
I'm happy that they have, that they're worth talking about.
You're what?
That's
what
all.
Was that adjective?
I'm happy that the Knicks are worth talking about. I'm happy that like there's actually some excitement around it, and it's not a
it
bunch
affects
of blowhards.
Your daily life.
Yeah, and it's not a bunch of like blowhards and Timberland boots talking about a team that doesn't really exist. You guys actually have like something to be pumped about, and I'm happy. I'm happy to see a draft pick like turn into something as well in New York. It's so uncommon.
Like, I'm happy that this nonstop white noise feed in my ear that's called my friend Stefan actually has something to say now.
Hey, is there a top? When is the last time you guys had a top? You got the top pick right. You got an early pick correct.
Oh, wow.
Before KP.
That's,
is there one?
The draft. I mean, you know what? Let's go. I'm willing to go to the videotape here in terms of the draft pick history for the Knicks. So Zing, they took at number 4. This year was great. Ntilikina and Dotson, I think, both show promise. Before Zing, they took Cleanthony early and Giannis' brother Thanasis. They didn't pan out. Timmy Hardaway, who's now back with the team. That's confusing. Kostas Papanikolaou, Iman Shumpert, Andy Routens, Landry Fields, Jordan Hill.
Nobody.
Sadly, a player that did not pan out from the University of California, Los Angeles, Dijon Thompson.
Oh, and now we're spelling that D-I-J-O-N?
You goddamn right we are. I mean,
beautiful.
If you go back, well, dude, the last rookie that they re-signed was Charlie Ward, who was the who was their first round pick with the 26th pick in the 1994 draft.
I pair Charlie Ward, Florida State, amazing quarterback as well, two-sport athlete. When I think of Charlie Ward, I think of Chris Childs. Like I put them both. And they're both kind of occupy a similar space in my memory. When I think of Chris Childs, I think of him punching Kobe in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was once a t-shirt that I tried to buy by Underground, but I realized they stopped making it like 5 years ago. Anyway, so yeah. So, I mean, look, it benefits both of us that they're good again. I don't wish ill on you, joke as I may about the Bulls. The question that I do want to revisit later is this idea of, you know, is Phil Jackson somehow validated? We basically need to find him in Montana. Jesse, we need to do the Montana road trip and just get to the bottom of it.
Track him
get
down.
To the bottom of it. But anyway, in the meantime, everyone here loves the Knicks. That's great to hear. You know, we'll be back soon. Keep calling the hotline, 323-736-1703. My apologies that we haven't been able to get to it lately. Time has been of the essence, but I promise we're saving the messages, and we will hit them up. I also want to extend a thank you to the man behind, the artist behind Literally Balling, Victor Solomon. who, by the way, sent me, he's a fan of the show, and as a token of his appreciation for Open Run, sent me a print of his work, which is this beautiful golden basketball. And Jesse, we can, you know, we can split every other month, you know.
Nice.
But at the risk of saying the obvious, this is more for my benefit than Jesse's. Jesse is on social media at iJesseWilliams. You might know that. I am at Steph on My Mind. Ben is at Cruise Control, CruzKontrol. And you can follow the show at Open Run, obviously. Subscribe on iTunes. Review it. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Play it during Thanksgiving. That's all we got. Thanks for listening this week. We'll be back before you know it.
Peace.
Woo. For more Open Run, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or visit openrunshow.com. And if you like being in the loop, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Open Run.